Okay, continuing. Canto 2, Chapter 2. The Lord in the Heart. From yesterday, the emphasis was on the subject was the meditation of the Supersoul, and the last verse that we covered emphasizes even the meditation upon Supersoul is to come to the stage of devotional service, which is the next chapter. The verse reads, unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, who is the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. So, like saying what was discussed in the previous chapter, is only for those who have not come to this stage of transcendence and transcendental meditation and service unto the Supreme Lord. It's to sanctify prescribed duties over on that side, the gross materialist side. Gross materialist meaning they don't even have a spiritual conception of God. So let them take this universal form conception of God, meditate upon that in conjunction with their prescribed duties. Better, that's only if they cannot do the following. Engage in a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord by this meditation process, meditation on Supersoul process. Going back one further verse, Prabhupada writes, this process of meditation, Supersoul meditation, recommended herein is bhakti yoga, or the process of devotional service after one is liberated from material conditions. So, there's a progression, is the idea. The progression is no conception of God. Then a conception of God is Virajrupa. Then, next step, recognize that there's a form of the Lord within the heart. Meditation upon that form of the Lord within the heart. The next is engage in service to that form of the Lord within the heart. So if one is not at that stage, the other, in conjunction with one's worldly duties, meditation upon the Virat Rupa is to be done to help sanctify one's existence, to move from the gross materialistic way of life to a more spiritual position. So that's a summary of what we discussed yesterday. And today, we'll cover a few verses. O King, this is Shukadev, speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, in response to the question, what is the duty of life in general, for people in general? And specifically, second question, what is the duty of a person who's about to die? So, we're heading towards being absorbed in devotional service, but then there are steps. If one can't do that immediately, there's steps to take, progressive. Okay. Now this is the for one who's about to die message. Whenever the yogi, O King, desires to leave this planet of human beings, he should not be perplexed about the proper time or place, but should comfortably sit without being disturbed and, regulating the life air, should control the senses by the mind. Do we have the Bhagavad Gita here? Can we find it in Bhagavad Gita? Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 8.14, it is clearly stated that, 8.14, that a person who is totally engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord and who constantly remembers Him at every step easily obtains the mercy of the Lord by entering into His personal contact. So here's the Bhagavad Gita verse. Ananya cheta satatam yomam smarati nityashaha tasyaham sulabha harta nitya yuktasya yoginaha. Translation: for one who always remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. So, the meaning is, by constant engagement in devotional service, automatically your meditation upon the Supreme Lord is accomplished. The discussion, part of the discussion we had yesterday, was the fruit of Gyan Yoga, this detachment from the material conception of life, leads to detachment from the material things of life, or trying to be the enjoyer of material things in life. From Gyan, Vairagya follows. Remember that discussion? So, through the process of bhakti, the anarjanavritti process already takes care of that. Or, the fruit of Gyan Yoga is already included in bhakti yoga. It's a subset. Remember that discussion? Okay, good. Now what's being said here is, what follows that one is this meditation upon the form of the Lord within the heart. That meditation upon the form of the Lord within the heart leads eventually, is meant to lead to the position of rendering service to the transcendental Lord. When transcendental service to the Lord is accomplished, the mind being fixed upon the Supreme Lord is accomplished. Gyan Yoga is a subset of Bhakti Yoga. That was yesterday. Dhyan Yoga is a subset of Bhakti Yoga. That's today. You got it? Should I do it again? You got it. Okay. Like a materialist that doesn't have a conception of God, what is it that their fruitive work is targeted towards? Towards the objects of the senses. It's saying they work hard for their family. They're absorbed in working hard for their family. A bird is working hard for his family, and an elephant is working hard for his family, and animals, there are also birds and animals and all varieties, all species of life, they're working hard for their family. And human life that does the same is it's just a polished form of animal life. So where there's a conception of God carries one to the next, to the real purpose of human life. So the message is, when the yogi desires to leave this planet of human beings, this fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord is necessary, and then there's the mechanical process, and then there's the natural process. The natural process is, you serve Krishna. If you're consciously serving Krishna, your mind is fixed upon Krishna. Prabhupada's comment, another explanation of this, people at their workplace, they keep a picture of their family. Because they're at work for their family. They're earning for their husband, wife, for their children, for their family. It goes right by their workstation. Or I've seen it here in India, and it's less common in America, but sometimes Prabhupada uses this example. Sometimes people in their car, they keep the hanging from the rearview mirror their baby's baby shoes. You've not seen that. I've seen it. Prabhupada's comment is, when they see the shoes, they don't just see the shoes, they see their child. The shoes remind them of their child. It's the affection that comes just by seeing the shoes. You know, it's a poetic thing. Like you see a pair of ballet slippers, and you can think of the slippers of the ballerina. Or you see, you know, the cricket stick of your favorite cricket player. You don't see the cricket player, but you know that's his stick, and that's his uniform number, and oh, my hero. You get the idea. So even paraphernalia can remind one of the person behind the paraphernalia. So that inspires people. When you're working for some person, just even a reminder of that person helps you, for the fruitive worker, to work hard for that person. So the mind is fixed on the person, even you're busy working. Because you're attached to the person, or persons. And where there's not a God conception, that prevails. And that binds one to illusion and all the threefold miseries of material life. And so the message is not, well, don't work. The message is, when you're performing your duties of life, have your consciousness absorbed in the right place. Work for the Supreme. When you work for the Supreme, you certainly can be very conscientious about caring for family members and friends and all the devotees and all the non-devotees and all the birds and all the trees and all the parts of God's creation because of attachment for the Supreme. So how to cultivate the attachment for the Supreme? The message of this verse, text 15, is if someone is engaged in devotional service, they need not concern themselves with the lesser mechanical stages. So, say it the other way around. Those mechanical stages are there for those that don't have faith in the Supreme. They don't have full devotion to the Supreme. You with me? So here, text 14 of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, says, for once engaged in devotional service, Krishna is the swift deliverer. Ananya cheta satatam yoman smarati nityashaha tasyaham sulava. Very easily achieved. Then there's the durlava. Then you got to start all this calculation about when is the auspicious time to leave the body. So that's included. Bhagavad Gita chapter 8, text 23 through 26, which says, O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times at which passing away from this world the yogi does or does not come back. 24. Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain that Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery God in the light at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. 25. The mystic who passes away from this world during the smoke the night, the fortnight of the waning moon, or the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, reaches the moon, but again comes back. Text 26. According to the Vedic opinion, there are 2 ways of passing from this world, one in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back, but when one passes in darkness, he returns. And there's other Chandogya Upanishad references and so forth that speak to this same message. So the idea that Prabhupada is pointing to in the purport with these Bhagavad Gita references, I'll just say it one more time, that when you're on the topmost stage, which the Bhagavatam is pointing us towards, the stage of unmotivated devotional service, when one is on that platform, all these lesser considerations need not be taken. Krishna is the swift deliverer. One very easily achieves the destination, whatever the time, whatever the circumstance. It's not materially determined. You go to these lesser stages, and it's very important what time the soul leaves the body, and so many, what direction you're facing, so many things. There's Shubha and there's Ashubha. But there is transcendental life where Shubha and Ashubha don't matter. So those that are an example of this is that there are those that are very attentive to the particulars of these ritualistic indications in karma kanda, or the particulars of auspicious and inauspicious circumstances for the yogi, and they're really caught up in that. The Bhagavatam is letting us know that's fine, that's appropriate for those that are caught up in that, and that for them it is critical. But one who has advanced further in consciousness, it's not. Because those that are, where it's not critical, they're depending fully upon Krishna, and Krishna delivers. He makes the rules, he breaks the rules. Or he makes exceptions to the rules. He's ultimately the deliverer in any case. So for those that have lesser faith, there's rules. And those that have greater faith, that's the ultimate rule. That carries one to the spiritual position. So, once again, O King, whenever the yogi desires to leave this planet of human beings, he should not be perplexed about the proper time, place, but he should comfortably sit without being disturbed and, regulating the life there, should control the senses by the mind. So, he's telling Maharshi Parikshit, you're about to die, here's the method. Don't worry about time and place. Don't get disturbed by those kinds of calculations. That is a distraction. Place your attention fully upon the personality of Godhead. You must control your mind and senses. Fix your consciousness upon the personality of Godhead. You'll achieve the destination. Such devotees do not need to seek an opportune moment to leave the present body, but those who are mixed devotees, avoid with fruitive action or empiric philosophical speculation, require an opportune moment for quitting this body, stated in Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter. But these opportune moments are not as important as one's being a successful yogi who is able to quit his body as he likes. Such a yogi must be competent to control his senses by the mind. That's going to be elaborated next. How to control the senses by the mind. The mind is easily conquered simply by engaging it in the lotus feet of the Lord. Gradually, by such service, all the senses become automatically engaged in the service of the Lord. That is the way of merging into the Supreme Absolute. Now, using this language, merging into the Supreme Absolute, not in the Sayuja Mukti sense, but in the full detachment from material involvement sense, and fully fixed in devotion to the Supreme sense, in that sense. Okay. So the next topic in the next two verses is this term Labdho Prashanti. Labdha means obtain. Upashanti, the shanti means peace, and upashanti, coming to that, or coming near to that position of the Supreme. The Supreme peaceful situation. That which people want. They want to be peaceful and contented and happy. Everybody wants. So here's how that Labdho Prashanti can come even in the face of imminent death. Very valuable instruction. Thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self. Now, again, this doesn't mean the jiva becomes paramatma. Not what it means. It'll explain. It means that the consciousness of the individual soul exclusively goes to the Supreme. The mind doesn't go to material contemplations. It goes fully upon the eternal soul, the soul to the Supreme Soul. By doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction. That's this Labdha Upashanti. And he ceases from all other activities because that's so satisfying. One doesn't need to do other things because other things are meant to bring a satisfaction. Your satisfaction is complete. There's no impelling urge to do anything else but that one thing. Just like Dhruva Maharaj. What to speak of doing other things? He wasn't even moving. He stood on one leg. He wasn't eating. He wasn't drinking water. He wasn't sleeping. He was barely even breathing. And he wasn't feeling pain. Oh, this hurts. He was in ecstasy. He was seeing the Supreme Lord within his heart at every moment. Purport. The functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. When the mind is materialistic or absorbed in material contact, it acts for material advancement of knowledge, destructively ending in discovery of nuclear weapons. Meaning, when the mind is contemplating enjoyment, it may very well come up with something that's not enjoyment. But when the mind acts under spiritual urge, it acts wonderfully for going back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, the mind has to be manipulated by good and unalloyed intelligence. If one's intelligence is contaminated and falsely constructed, then it will not be able to guide the mind properly. So therefore Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who studies the sacred conversation is worshipping me with his intelligence. His intelligence is becoming purified so that then the mind can be properly directed. Perfect intelligence is to render service unto the Lord. Then there's a very interesting sentence, you have to listen carefully. One should be intelligent enough to understand that the living being is, in all circumstances, a servant of the circumstances. Or the way that Prabhupada writes this in first canto, that 19th chapter, I believe, he says that real happiness comes when one places oneself in full dependency upon the Supreme Lord. And he says, the living entity is always dependent on something because he is so constructed. By constitution, the soul is a servant of Krishna. So we're dependent upon Krishna. But if one chooses to not depend upon Krishna, you'll be dependent upon material circumstances. Because the material circumstances are created to give us a lot of stuff to do. Keep us really busy. Because we don't want to serve Krishna, then we have to serve the material circumstances. And be dependent upon them. And then when sometimes there's happiness, they change, it's unhappiness. That changes, it's mixed happiness and unhappiness. Or just being tossed around like a piece of wood on the waves of the ocean. The wave goes up, the piece of wood goes up. The wave goes down, piece of wood goes down. And depending upon the circumstances, one's condition of happiness and distress is all over the place. And it's exhausting. It's not satisfying. And it doesn't end. There is an option. Place oneself dependent upon the Supreme Lord. Then the material circumstances can be whatever they are. I'm dependent, my happiness is dependent upon my relationship with the Supreme Lord. So he says the same thing in a different way here. One should be intelligent enough to understand that the living entity is, in all circumstances, a servant of the circumstances. That's in the material condition. So we can recreate the natural circumstance, which is to turn our attention to Krishna. But because we're constitutionally servants, we're a servant of circumstances, or the servant of the Creator, who makes all circumstances, spiritual and material. In the material condition, every living being is serving the dictates of desire, anger, lust, illusion, insanity, and enviousness, all materially affected. But even while executing such dictations of different temperaments, he's perpetually unhappy. Now the spiritual side. When one actually feels this and turns his intelligence to inquiring about from the right sources, he gets information of the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Instead of serving materially for the above mentioned different humors of the body, the living entity's intelligence then becomes freed from the unhappy illusion of materialistic temperament, and thus, by unalloyed intelligence, the mind is brought into the service of the Lord. So, that's an expanded explanation of this idea that the yogi, by his unalloyed intelligence, should bring the mind to the position of being obedient to the soul's desire to serve God. And then the soul becomes prompted by the indication of the Supreme Lord, surrender unto me, and he surrenders unto the Supreme Lord. So then the intelligence and the mind are being properly utilized. The mind isn't causing you disturbance. It's the means of liberation. And all systems of yoga, the function of the mind is critical. To purify the mind, to elevate the mind, to fix the mind. Different disciplines are there to help bring the mind to the right position, at least to the neutral position. But this is beyond neutral position. Because even in the neutral position, something can come along and disturb that neutrality. Therefore, and here's a curious sentence, the unalloyed intelligence and the mind are merged into the Lord, and thus the living entity does not remain a seer himself, but becomes seen by the Lord transcendentally. So, you know, it's what's going on here is that the seat of consciousness is the soul. Like the sun radiates heat and light, the soul radiates consciousness. The soul is the center of consciousness. If when Krishna consciousness, Krishna becomes the center, and what was important for the devotee is not the enjoyment of experiencing objects, but the joy of the devotee is being seen by Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta spoke like that. Don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. It's another way of saying the same thing. It's here. Let what's the central most important thing for every individual is myself. Let that central important thing be Krishna. When Krishna sees me, let him smile. And then I will be the most happy. Not when I see Krishna, then I will smile. And I will be the most happy. It's a different consciousness. It's this consciousness of a servant. Let the master be pleased. When I come before Krishna, Krishna should be so happy. Now Krishna is not, I don't think, so happy. Because I have all this stuff, all this contamination. When the living entity is directly seen by the Lord dictates to him to act according to Krishna's desire, his desire. And when the living entity follows him perfectly, the living entity ceases to discharge any other duty for his illusory satisfaction. So that's this Labdho Prashanti state. The Labdho Prashanti state, saying, go to the discussion earlier. This Labdho Prashanti state is aspired for by the meditative yogis, where they're experiencing satisfaction and bliss by no longer banging their head against the wall of trying to enjoy the material circumstances. They just made that neutral by giving their undivided attention to the Supreme Lord. That's their Labdho Prashanti state. The devotee goes further. Because even from the practicing stage, I may not see the form of Supersoul, but the process of bhakti, which I've taken up, allows me to more and more and more and more desire to be absorbed, mind, intelligence, and soul exclusively in the service of the Lord. When one has that, the desire is, let Krishna see me and be pleased. And when one is in that state, Krishna does give indication, this will please me. And when the devotee has no other interest than the indication from Krishna, this will please me, that's his Labdho Prashanti state. And he can't be moved from that position. Someone can offer such a devotee, would you like $1 million? Would you like intoxication? Would you like something? It, you know, it's not going to phase that devotee. Not at all. Labdho Prashanti state in devotion includes as a subset the Labdho Prashanti state of meditation. Same principle. Only it's completely fixed. Because it's our natural and constitutional position. Whereas, simply to be in a neutral state, seeing the form of Super Soul within the heart, it's not conclusive. It's not what our natural state is. Our natural state is to be active in service to the Supreme. You got the idea? So the Labdho Prashanti state, Prabhupada is just helping us, because the second chapter is meditation of the Lord in the heart, but he's taking us to the further stage. So is Shukadeva Goswami. With Maharaj Parikshit. Last verse. In that transcendental state of Labdho Prashanti, there is no supremacy of devastating time, which controls even the celestial demigods who are empowered to rule over mundane creatures. And what to speak of the demigods themselves. Nor is there the mode of goodness, nor passion, nor ignorance, nor even the false ego, nor the material causal ocean, nor the material nature. So, that consciousness carries one to the spiritual realm. Even when one physically is in this material realm, one is with Krishna. Prabhupada explained, I've shared this in other circumstances, but Prabhupada was once visiting in Los Angeles. He called that his headquarters in the Western world. He spent substantial time there and really worked on the deity worship program and the book distribution program, and it was like the administration. It was a place where persons would go to really get, this is how Prabhupada wanted things to be done. And it was, you know, a very large community. So when he came to Los Angeles, people came from all over the place. Same as when he came to New York, came from all over the place. So, when he arrived, he gave his explanation on this point by saying that my disciples are always very eager to get news about me, and when I'm in India, they're writing to me saying, where will I go and what am I doing? And then they discuss those things. And Swamiji is now in India, and soon he'll go to Japan. And then from Japan, he'll go to New Zealand and Australia, and then to Hawaii. And soon he'll come here to Los Angeles. And we will see him. And so while you're considering like that, you should know, the fact is I'm always with Krishna. So, for service, we may be here or there. We may be doing this and doing that. And so, based upon those things, there's some identification. He's a professor, he's a student, he's a sannyasi, he's a this and she's a that. And those are the description of how we're serving Krishna. But in this Labdho Prashanti state, one is with Krishna. There's no time, there's no material nature, there's no false ego. One is still serving, acting through the material elements. But because when consciousness is with Krishna, one is with Krishna. And one who is with Krishna doesn't want to be anywhere else but with Krishna. And one can be with Krishna, serving Krishna in all circumstances of life. It's that consciousness that we want. We don't need a change of circumstance to be happy. We need Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada speaks in the purport, the higher planets, up to Brahmaloka, the demigods, time factor is working. It's working everywhere in the material creation. But it's not having its impact, nor the agency of false ego, it's not having its impact on the devotee of the Lord. So that's when one becomes sufficiently elevated. So these sequential stages are being identified. So this is high. But high is good. I mean, to hear about the state of consciousness, it's a relief. Now, the reality is we're struggling somewhere way down here. When the mind is dictating so many things, and the senses are dictating more things, and the intelligence is not fixed, and oh. But this gives us an idea of where we want to go and how to get there. Prabhupada explained, it's a very important principle, that when your goal is well defined, it's very easy to take steps to reach that goal. Steps are not a problem to take if you're really fixed on achieving a very sublime goal and it's very, very clear. And if it's sentimental, the idea is not very clear, then one can do for some time, but then it's broken. So one has to very carefully deliberate on what the goal is. Otherwise, how can you be enthusiastic to get there? And take the steps and continue taking the steps to get there. So, even if, the message here is, even if one is involved in something that can elevate one to the heavenly planets and so on, these undesirable forces are still working there. So that's not what we should aspire for. We should aspire for the spiritual position now and begin working towards that now. And whatever progress we make towards that ultimate goal is uniquely falls in the category of eternal. It goes with the soul, wherever the soul goes. And material advancement does not. You leave it behind. Whatever wealth, whatever knowledge, whatever position, your body, and all the stuff connected to it, it's gone. And spiritual progress goes with you. Okay. Any discussion?
You were saying that when goal is clear, steps can be taken very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And you are saying is that our goal is to please our master, Supreme Lord and His representatives. And at the same time, you are contrasting that when it is sentimental, goals will not be clear. So, sir, when Maharaj is practicing, some sentiment is also involved.
Sentiment is not to be made zero. Sentiment should be connected to proper understanding. Sentiment is natural, that we have minds. But so thinking, feeling, and willing that are natural functions of the mind. If the mind has a misconception or a very vague, foggy conception, then sentiment will also be there, but misdirected or faint and foggy, and sometimes this and sometimes not this, and sometimes that. Sometimes attracted, sometimes not attracted, sometimes repulsed, sometimes angry. Now, just to say something in favor of, even if, so I'm saying something in favor of dedication to the personality of Godhead, even if it's sentimental. That's permanent. Even if one goes away because it's sentimental. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that such a person, they'll have two sets of options. Suchinam shimatam gehe yoga brashta bhajayate. One will, let's just say, here's the sentimental person who hasn't really clearly understood the message that Krishna is giving, but they are very enthused. Their sentiments are aroused. And then after some time, their sentiments change and they go away. Such a person gets permanent benefit. First, even on the temporary side, they'll achieve birth in a wealthy aristocratic family or a Brahmana family and be allowed to continue their devotional service where they left off. While the other is, one goes to the heavenly planets to enjoy for some time, comes back, and then continues where he left off. One's like a big detour and the other is just directly. So there's gain even for the sentimentalist, and for the materialist there's no gain. But better than the sentimentalist or the mixed devotee is to become very clear in our purpose. And then we can stay fixed. And by staying fixed, we'll achieve the goal. Slowly, gradually traversing the path to reach the goal. Something else. You have something over there?
Maharaj, you told that we must place ourselves always in dependent position.
Because we are.
How do we have this mood, this dependency?
It's not a matter of more dependency, it's a matter of recognizing the reality. We are dependent. I may wish to not be dependent. The reality is we're completely dependent. At every moment, in every detail, it's just reality. Just, you know, be thoughtful. Look around and don't just be an automatic. Be thoughtful. There was a full moon this morning or last night, so I saw it through the window. And you know, you can just go with anything. You know, the moonlight is necessary for growth of vegetables, and we're dependent upon the moonlight for survival. We wouldn't have anything to eat if it wasn't for the moon and the sun, and etc. So many calamities come, and just like that, everything's fine, and the next moment everything's destroyed. Just like that. We're dependent. I was in Guyana before coming here. It's supposed to be the dry season. It's now become the rainy season, one of two rainy seasons. And they have a spring tide, so it comes higher than any other time of the year. Guyana is very much at sea level. So the devotees have a business. It's a printing business. There's many devotees employed. They earn their livelihood working together, the printing business. One devotee told me he left the store to go home for 15 minutes from the door to the door. And when he came back, the place was flooded with a foot of water. In 15 minutes. It wasn't rain, it was just the tide came and destroyed so much of all the paper that was on the floor. Now what to speak of, you know, so many things that happened. It's the whole flood that came in Maharashtra, and just to see the buildings, you know, all that was left was just the rooftops. Everything was destroyed. Just like that. And on and on and on and on, you know, get a toothache. We're so dependent. Little thing, this body is so complex, and one little thing goes wrong, and you know, you can't function. You sit down to take an exam. You're dependent. Matapsmitir gyanam apohanam cha. Just to get up and walk across the floor. You know, just be reflective, and we're absolutely dependent. So one can be, you have a choice, dependent upon material circumstances or dependent upon the controller of material circumstances. Then there's sentiment, there's the feeling of submission. I can be, you know, just, I don't have a choice in the matter, so I'll be dependent upon Krishna. Or lovingly depend upon this sublime, loving person. And so that person shows a different feature according to our regard for him. The state is seen by a criminal as something to be feared. The government, in the hands of a law-abiding citizen, is a friend. It's either policeman, oh, nice day today. It's because he's protecting them. Other thing is, you know, what subjectively, what it feels like to be a good citizen and to be a thief, to be in a relationship with Krishna, serving Krishna with feelings of dependence upon him, and striving for some objective of life with a strong independent spirit. It just feels different. One's nice and the other's not nice. One's natural, the other's very unnatural. That says something. A thoughtful person will get the message. Anything else? Yeah.
Maharaj, you told that consciously serving Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that? Consciously serving spiritual preceptor and how it accomplishes?
How is it accomplished? That's your question? Well, this is, the science of love. I was giving the example, someone who's attached, they think of that person they're attached to. Now that's when there's material attachment, and spiritual attachment requires at least initially a little effort to go, the little effort is just to go beyond selfishness. Like a child is dependent, speaking of connecting this with dependency. The child, small child is dependent upon their parents. If the parents don't feed the child, they're starved. If the parents don't give affection to the child, they'll be disturbed. The child is a little of affection machine, attention machine. They gotta have attention all the time. They're dependent. They can't go find it anywhere else. It has to be brought to them. So, in spiritual life, one recognizes that which will take me beyond this material dependency is another very special gift. It's a transcendental gift. And so, as a child, doesn't so much, they're attached, but they don't, the expressions of gratitude are not so much there because they're not mature. They're just, they want. Whatever it is they want, they want it. And if they don't get it, they scream till they get it. I had the flight from Europe to Delhi. Right next to me was a little child that was like that the whole way. Wow. Mother was really busy. And she kept looking at me like, what do I do? So, there's no satiation. When's enough for the child? But so for a mature person, for spiritual life, there must be the sense of gratitude. Now, for some persons, it's easier than for other persons, but still, it's something that needs to be there. You need to consciously acknowledge this spiritual gift. And when you acknowledge that spiritual gift, you develop attachment. This is taking me out of this material dependency situation. And when that spiritual attachment is there, you think of the person all the time. Your whole life is based upon being guided by the wisdom of that spiritually elevated soul. Naturally, so. Your every action, every word, everything you do and say and think is guided by that relationship. As a materialist becomes attached, a spiritualist becomes attached. Because we're dependent. We are designed in that way. It's our constitutional position. So it's something that we need from the spiritual side, we need to cultivate. A child automatically, they don't have to go to school or cultivate anything. You know, they're dependent upon their mother. They you know, little kittens know what to do. They go to their mother and they're fed. You don't have to tell anybody anything. That material dependency is built in by the law of nature. And spiritual is something that only because of our fallen condition, it's something we need to cultivate. And it takes going beyond being selfish, just taking without any sense of gratitude. Then one isn't going to get the spiritual benefit, because one's consciousness is still in a material position. Anything else? You have something?
Yeah. The same connection you mentioned about that spiritual gift. But while expressing gratitude, the consciousness doesn't go that actually deeply that what is spiritual gift. It's just even if we think, even just with intelligence that yeah, such a rare gift, rarest gifts are given. But that feelings don't come while expressing gratitude or adding gratitude.
That's because our hearts are hard. And also because we don't have a real sense of the spiritual value that we're receiving. But the heart will become soft. Naturally so, in course of time. It's part of the price that we have to pay for our long contamination material existence. Our hearts are hard. But what you just described is millions of times above the condition of the average materialistic person. And that expression that you just shared with us is the result of good association. So continue with that good association, and those natural feelings will awaken. Say the same thing in a different way. If you have wet wood and put wet wood on a fire, what happens? Smoke. No flames. Maharaj, how come there's not flames when I put this wood into the fire? It's because it's wet. But leave it in the fire, and the moisture will be driven out, and then it'll ignite. Just leave it in the fire. Okay? But make sure you keep the fire nice and strong. Stay in the fire of devotional service. And avoid pouring more water onto the wood. Avoid offenses and indulgences and sense gratification. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.